Hello and welcome to Holden Village. This afternoon, Pete Goddard's session called Parenting Without Going Gray, Bald, or Insane, number 99-5. It is July the 23rd, 1999. Let's listen in.
Hi, my name is Pete Goddard, and I want to know why you are all inside on a beautiful day like this and not outside. But anyway, since you are here, this is part two of the session on parenting without going gray, bald, or completely insane. And those of you that haven't been to any of my sessions, I am not a parent. I am a social worker. I work with teenagers and children and their parents. I've been a house parent. I have been a foster parent for respite for kids at times. I've been offered children, the usual kind of stuff. I do not have children. And so again, please keep that in mind, because my perspective is going to be more from the children's point of view, since I have been a child in the past. Many people accuse me of still being that at times. But I haven't been a parent, and I don't have that experience. And so that does make it very different for me. So kind of keep that in mind. Let's see, we're going to begin. Oh, okay. Yesterday we were kind of touching somewhat on communication and how important communication is in finding a space where communication can take place between you and your kids. And how do you create that kind of a space? Well, I want to practice today a little bit of listening and not listening type of stuff. So what I'd like for you to do is to start off by, I want you to pair up with someone, okay? And kind of move out away some and get away from this main group. So get your pair, stand up, and then move away somewhere. And one of you will be A, the other will be B. So decide who's going to be A and who's going to be B.
You don't care where we are, just
I don't care. No. As long as you stay in the room. Okay? Anybody not have a partner?
Yeah.
Okay. Why don't you pair? Get two A's and one B. Okay. Alright. So everyone know who's an A, who's a B? Alright. A's, I want you to listen. A's, listen. B's, don't listen right now. A's, I'm going to tell you, I want for a minute, I want you to talk. And I want you to talk to B. And I want you to talk to them about something that's somewhat maybe important or not so important or whatever it might be. But I want you to talk for 60 seconds. And I want you to do whatever you have to do to make them listen. Short of sitting on them or bloodshed, but stay in this room now. You must make B listen. Do whatever you have to. You must make them listen. Okay? A's, you got your directions? Okay. B's, I want you to listen. A's, don't listen right now. B's, I don't care what you have to do. Don't you dare listen to A's. Go. All right, time, hold it, don't move. Reverse roles. Go. Okay. All right, come on back and have a seat, please.
Did you turn away from me?
Oh, I've been here.
All right. Those of you that were trying to make the other person listen, what was that like?
Frustrating.
Like normal. Impossible.
Like what?
Impossible.
Like normal. What else?
Impossible.
Impossible.
Yeah, I lost my train of thought.
Yes.
What am I trying to say here?
Ah, yeah. All right.
I felt devalued. Like, maybe I don't have anything valuable to say. Why don't I just shut down?
Okay, and who was in control at that time?
The non-listener.
Okay, all right, now, What was it like then when you were trying to not listen and the person was trying to make you listen? What was that like?
Power.
Kind of fun.
That was
easy.
Yeah.
Fun.
Oh, yeah.
It was really getting the other person worked up a lot.
They were strangers.
Uh-huh. All right. Yeah. So, what does this do, this talk? What does this have to do then talking with children?
It's like so much of parenting, it's a game. What can I do to make it so interesting that this person will have to listen to me?
Okay. So how do you do that?
I picked a topic that I thought she might be interested in.
Ah. Which was?
Oh, I was telling her about something I made for a benefit auction.
Sounds really interesting to me, yeah.
About food in Norway.
So you were listening.
Yes, I was listening.
Ah!
But I got right in front of her and listened. But I just retorted. And she told me I was very typical of her son.
It's amazing when I do this with teenagers. What it's like for them. To be in the role of trying to make someone listen. You know, so often they're, they're on the other end, kind of stuff. I know, kind of stuff. And they keep saying that, and a lot of times they don't know. But it's like, when they're telling you that kind of stuff, what are they saying?
Well, we hope they're listening. If they're responding, I know.
They're hoping he'll stop talking.
Let
this be over, but I don't have enough power in this relationship to just walk out on it. So I'm going to passively...
What makes it so hard for kids to listen to us sometimes?
Because we go on and on. That's what my son tells me. He says, don't go on and on.
Do we? Do we go on and on?
Oh, yeah.
Why do we go on and on?
Because we don't think they're listening.
Is it control?
Control from which side? What are you talking about now? Which side?
We want to model these children. So we want them to hear what we want to say. We want them to be like us.
Okay, so you're trying to control them?
Yeah, we tell them. That's why it's so boring.
That's why it's so boring. All right. So what is it that you're trying to tell kids? All right.
Let's see.
I think we use repetition as a means of emphasis. That every time I say, now watch out for the bears, I'm trying to focus this child on watching for the bears. But the reality is they tuned out a long time ago. Because I said it too many times.
Ah. Really?
Bear hasn't chased him down the trail yet.
All right. So sometimes by our repetition, we're hurting ourselves. Okay. All right. So if we were to narrow down, what kind of messages? All right, I'm gonna give you three messages. Three messages that you can give children, your children. And these are the only three messages you can give them from now on. And that's it. What would be some of the possible options of those three messages?
Stay safe.
Yeah, that's gonna work. It's always to keep them safe.
Yeah. Be kind and respectful to others.
Be kind and respectful to others.
Believe in yourself.
Take care of God's creation.
Okay.
I
ask yourself, and you don't have to answer this out loud. When's the last time your child got and hear these messages from you? Now remember, you're just saying that we repeat things so often that they're not listening. It's going over their heads. So how often are you able to get these kind of messages across to your kids in ways that it means something to them?
Part of the problem is we don't articulate those messages always in the most positive way. When we say be kind and respectful of others, that's what we're thinking, but what we're really saying is make sure you say thank you, or there's some directive we are issuing regarding manners, perhaps.
Okay.
So we're not articulating it in these positive fashions.
Oh, okay.
Well, and so often our cautions like that really undermine the belief in yourself. It's like, I don't think you're going to remember and figure this out. So, blah, here comes the big neon message at you again. It's like, oh no.
Yes.
I think, at least with our kids, the first one got that message the most. You know, because we were so worried that she wouldn't, you know, be with us, so we gave all these extra instructions. I think we're kind of slacking off, but she still had to put up with all that extra, you know, tweaking that we were trying to do.
Yes.
But, you know, and then you realize, hey, they're going to be okay. So then you kind of back off on the next one.
Yeah. In the day-to-day activity of doing things, a lot of this gets lost. You know, go pick up your room, do your chores, do your homework, be home on time. You know, why were you late? Who are you out with? No, just so many details all the time that we lose track of this kind of stuff. You know, and it's easy to do. You know, July? It was back in May. And my first nephew, the oldest nephew, graduated from high school. Gosh, you know, it's like, you know, an exciting kind of thing. He's down in Texas. And I wasn't able to be there, but, you know, I wrote him a letter. You know, with this kind of stuff in it. And I said, you know, David, I don't think I say this stuff enough to you, but this is how I really feel about you and what I think about you. And I wrote all this stuff to him, you know? And it's like, how often do I do that? Well, I could use a lot of excuses here. Well, he lives far away. I don't see him that. That doesn't cut it anymore. Come on now. So, you know, it's difficult because we forget to do this stuff. But this is the essential stuff. You talk about the communication and how you open that door to communicating. When your child knows, when they know this, that you will always love them, so that when they've wrecked the car, they know that they can come home, they know that you're going to be angry, they know there's going to be consequences, but they know that you're still going to be welcome in their home, and they still know that you love them. All right? All this kind of stuff. So this is what you work at doing. All right? Any questions on that aspect of it? Yeah,
this isn't really a question, but it's just a comment that, conversely, as a parent, I'm really thirsty and hungry to hear nice messages from my kids, and I get a lot of snarly, withdrawn stuff. So, you know, our needs to be affirmed don't get met very easily either.
All right. Don't lose that thought, okay? Hang on to that. Because I want to look up here as far as, I hate this thing so far away from me. Anyway, realistic expectations of kids and of you guys. All right? So, see, this one is the one that writes here. 0 to about age 5. What are some realistic expectations that you can expect from up to a 5-year-old as far as behavior or things they'll do? What are some of the things?
still hold your hand when you walk across the street.
Yeah. They'll tell you they love you.
A hug.
They'll
you?
Snuggle. They'll initiate a hug.
They want to help?
Yes.
They want to please?
They have tantrums when they can't keep a handle on all of that and just squirts out in every direction.
Yep.
Independence.
Okay. All right. Now, of you guys, back when your kids were in that age range from 0 to 5, what's expected of you?
To meet their needs.
What?
To meet their needs.
To be there.
Well, I'd say meet their needs realistically.
Feed them. All the basic, their basic needs.
Okay.
Patience.
What else?
Love and kindness.
Lots of physical closeness, physical ways of showing love and meeting needs.
Okay.
Time spent with them. Playing with them.
About 5 to 10. For kids, what's going on? Realistic expectations from a 5 to 10 year old.
They're starting school and they're starting to socialize, so you gotta expect that they're gonna start interacting with other kids and kind of leaving you, getting their own life. Longer attention span, longer focus on their activities of interest.
Okay.
They separate.
All right, what else?
Realistic expectations.
Realistic expectations, yes, that's what we're looking at.
No hitting, kicking, or biting.
Can I put less?
Less, yes. That's why I asked.
Control your emotions.
Yeah, I think control of emotions is a good way of phrasing it. You shouldn't have the outburst at some point.
Chores.
That's a good one. Responsibility. Okay.
Some siblings fight a lot. I didn't have that with my kids, but I hear it from other parents that in that age group they fight a lot. Mm-hmm.
Sibling rivalry?
Yeah. They can also still enjoy physical signs of affection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And physical, you know, kind of horseplay stuff.
Mm-hmm. They become more achievement oriented, especially due to school.
Mm-hmm. And start to develop their interests. I think, did we say no?
No.
Okay. For you guys now, what's going on with you during this time span?
You start to become more of a cheerleader, I think, at this age, during that age, of encouragement and acknowledgement of accomplishments and helping them to develop those talents and interests.
Okay.
And also sometimes more of a mitigator. All of a sudden they're, you know, I can't run as fast as so-and-so, or I can't do this, that sense of achievement, and I don't measure up. Mm-hmm. In
in some ways, so talking, so whether that would be counseling or mitigating those.
Kind of a mediator at times?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, what else?
Keeper of the calendar.
And driver of the van.
Chauffeur.
Deadline driver.
Turning in of all of the papers that needs to be turned in and signed. And all of those things you
all along we should be setting a good example.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are there realistic expectations for you?
Letting the children have more freedom. Learning
to let go.
Learning to let go.
Okay, and so realistically, what's that like then?
Difficult.
It means they don't always hold your hand when you cross the street.
Being welcoming to friends.
That's real important. They want you to be nice to their friends and not embarrass them in front of their friends.
And sometimes it means planning a family outing with the friend because that'll enrich the experience for the kid. Just going with the parents is like, oh, please. But if a friend can come along, then it takes on a whole new aspect.
Okay. All right. Okay, now, here we go. 10 to 15. Now, we've already got somewhere in here for the teenagers. Okay, here we go. This is the stuff we came up with yesterday as far as the characteristics of teen, preteen, but it's also might be helpful in looking at some of the realistic expectations of them. Just kind of quickly, friend-centered, helpful, idealistic, creative, compassionate, needy, physically at times, inquisitive, feel less than, awkward, fairness, integrity, not giving credit, sensitive, arrogance, emotional, self-centered, defiant, insecure, energetic, fun, uneven development, self-conscious, spacey, moody, new sense of self, one perspective, judgmental. Okay. Now, you guys, during this time period, what are realistic expectations for you all?
I feel like that it's our job to start directing some of these, number one, so they're not harmful to the child. Some of, if you know, the self-centeredness, the, you know, some of the things that we construe as maybe negative human traits, so that they can control those.
Kind of shape the negative behavior?
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe sort of an adjunct to that, being vigilant about patterns that could become more negative, whether it's hanging with people with low self-esteem or druggies or, you know, that kind. All of a sudden you start kind of evaluating their friends more. Are these safe people for my child to be with? Are
they okay, being watchful?
Yeah.
Okay.
Consistent in not only in our praise but in our discipline, I guess.
All right.
And,
you know,
patience.
Oh, yeah. Trusting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Till they screw up.
Till they screw up.
I think we need to shape their positive behavior too by encouraging the things that they're good at and praising them every time they do something that's
okay.
Standing for, you know.
Yeah,
being able to admit when we've goofed up.
Oh, yeah.
And that applies to almost all those age groups.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In a sense of humor.
Yeah.
Yeah, that helps a lot.
Now, you notice this is weighted to down here. Do you know why?
Because that's when they bring it to your attention.
That's when they bring it to your attention. That's the other.
And also being willing to forgive, modeling forgiveness to them.
Uh-huh.
So that they'll forgive us. No, but really, it's time.
But I can remember apologizing to my daughter when she was younger than 10. But she'd be crying or something. And then it's like, bingo, you know, and... So, yeah, it came in earlier, but they're verbally telling you at this stage.
And just for me, accepting, like, the whole acceptance thing of, you know, this is, could be hormonal, this is a stage, developmentally a task, when they don't, instead of saying, we're going through the terrible teens now, you know what it's like with a teenager, because then they pick that up.
Helping them take on more responsibility for their own. I mean, I guess in every part of their life. And that's sort of all the mental, too.
And being interested in the things that they're interested in, the people that they know, and the activities, and just being interested, listening, and...
With the angels, or... Operatic birthday.
Yeah, I don't know quite where it fits, but the idea of natural consequences, maybe that's part of the consistency, but sometimes we pad things or try and soften it, and if there's a natural consequence, they need to experience it at 15 so that they don't turn a fender bender into, you know, an escalated event.
Empathy. I think it's very hard for those, especially those of us who became parents later, to remember what it was like at 13 or 15 or whatever. Or we didn't want to remember.
Also, they're living in a different world than we lived in at 13. They're confronted with a lot more complicated issues.
Yes.
And more fearful.
Yes. Yeah. It's not as safe as it used to be.
Yeah, it's a different world.
Yeah. Okay, now, all right, I'm glad you got into some of the stuff down here that indicates, at least to some degree, that you are still human, and that you are fallible. I know your teenagers will definitely point that out to you, so I'm not worried about you not getting that message, but it's the idea that I think it comes more from parents, their expectations of themselves, at times being overly critical as far as, you know, oh my gosh, you know, am I messing my kid up? You know, maybe I should have done that, maybe I shouldn't have done that kind of stuff. All the second guessing type of stuff. This is where it takes networking with each other to be able to bounce that kind of stuff off of each other. You know, it's like, you know, I hate it when parents come to me and, you know, they ask, well, you know, oh, Pete, we've had this argument this week. We want to know what you think. And we'll go by what you say as far as whether Johnny should be able to do this or not. And frequently I'm like, I'm not going to do that with you. The reason being is that who am I to make this kind of a decision for your family? You know, and first of all, this is your job as a parent to make these decisions. Why are you giving that responsibility up? I don't want that responsibility. It's not my child. And I'm not going to suffer the consequences of things don't go well, or I'm not going to be there for the benefits if they do go well. So instead, what I do is I help them as a family to wrestle with this kind of stuff. What are the kind of resources do you need in making this kind of decision then? Who else can you talk to in your neighborhood that has someone of a similar age that you can talk to about? Who is it that you have involved at church? You know, at work, wherever it might be. Talk with other people. Everyone's going through the same stuff with their teenagers. This is not rocket science here, people. This is like everyone goes through this. Yeah.
My experience, it's
so ironic then, because I feel like that this is the age when I really need the most help. And when they're zero, you know, you've got all these early childhood development classes, you know, and then up here. So we did start like a teen, you know, kind of a support group, because, and we even brought in a professional who deals, you know, with that age, so that we could have some, you know, input, and that was so helpful, but it is frustrating.
It is a very lonely time.
Yeah, I got a call from a church in Buffalo. They wanted me to come out this past spring. Spring in Buffalo? Mm-hmm. You know, anyway, it was like, and to deal with some of these issues. And I said, I'll come out, you know, under one condition, that you promise me that when I'm out there, the group of parents I'm going to be working with, that's going to be the start of a parent support group. And that you promise that you're going to meet twice a month for the next 12 months, at least. If you agree to do that, and I'm going to check up on you, if you would agree to do that, then I'll come out and work with you. Because I want to give them the message that by having someone come out and talk with them for one weekend is not going to make a difference. It's not. Having the long-term type of stuff, yes. You being here this week and coming to these no sessions, yeah, it's going to help you some, maybe in your thinking, but the idea is that when you go back home, what can you do differently now? What can you get started? You don't need necessarily to have some expert come in and talk to you about this stuff. You can pick a topic, all right? How do you deal with proms? How do you deal with dating? When do they start dating? How do you deal with sex? Sex, wait a minute, your kids? You know, how do you deal with smoking? How do you deal with drugs? Not doing homework, you know, specific behavior problems. What do you do if your kid gets depressed? What do you do if they can keep breaking the rules that you have in the house? I mean, you can come up with the topics. This is not hard stuff to do. And you talk about it. And maybe you get stumped. And you're dealing with something specific and you're not sure what to do. And then that's maybe you call and get some resources to come in on that specific topic to help with that issue. But not in general. Because again, if we went around figured up all the number of years of parenting experience in here. You know, people ask me, what kind of books do you recommend? Right here, this is the book that I recommend, all of you. This is what's going to make the difference. If you remind yourself as far as these expectations, as far as what's going on with your kids, so you know that back at this age, you're going to have kids that still like to snuggle up with you. So when you sit down in front of the TV and watch a movie or something, you better make sure there's room for your kids sitting almost on top of you. All right? Now, when you get to here, you may have some kids that are still very cuddly, and some kids that would rather sit on the floor than sit on the same couch with you. That's a normal expectation. All right? Now, if you're the kind of parent that likes to cuddle with children a lot, and your child is like at the other end of the couch, and you're the one that wants them to cuddle next to you, what you're doing is, the message you're giving them is that my needs are more important than what your needs are. You're laying that foundation. All right? Child that doesn't want to cuddle, and you make them cuddle. All right? These important messages over here, they're not going to get through. Because what you're doing is you're starting to put barriers now between you and your child. Because your expectations of them are not being realistic. So you have to look at having your needs met in different ways. And that, you know, again, this is, you know, in the head I'm talking now, not from here, the gut. Because, you know, when you have a child that's, you know, back in this age range, 0-5, is real cuddly, and, you know, every morning they, you know, crawl into bed with you, and they say, I love you, and they snuggle, and, you know, all that kind of stuff, and then it stops, and you're like, oh, I missed that. All right? Well, that's normal development. You don't hold your children back from that kind of development of being able to go out more. Does that mean they don't need that physical contact with you anymore? Sure doesn't. But it changes. So as your children's need for physical contact change, how do you change? How do you change? Your child doesn't want to cuddle anymore. So how do you still, in a physical way, show them that you care for them? How do you do that? What are some of the ways?
Baseball.
Say some more. What do you mean?
Oh, spend time with them. Do what they want to do. Just, yeah.
Okay.
When they screw up, you give them a big hug.
Screw up and give them a big hug. And maybe not in front of the other kids. Mm-hmm. Or maybe yes, depending upon your child.
If the dad feels comfortable doing that, you know, or a mom.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It doesn't necessarily mean it's the parents' needs.
Yeah. How else?
Bedtime.
Still bed.
Bedtime.
Still laying down and cuddling, even if they're teens.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, well, one of the parents saying they're 14-year-old, so you know, mom, dad, you know, scratch my back.
Yeah, back rubs, foot rubs.
Okay. Yes. How else?
I once attended a seminar with Bob Bradbury, and he was telling that he always laid down with his kids on the floor every night and asked them what was the best thing about their day and the worst thing, and they just lay there and talk before bed.
There's a technique called 3-2-1. Three good things that happened during the day, two bad things that happened during the day, and then one good thing that happened during the day. And if you get in the routine of doing that with your child, you know, they get into, you know, the kind of process of what's going on. And some days they may have a hard time coming up with some of the good things. And you process and you say, well, it sounded like you didn't have a very good day today. But what you're doing by that kind of stuff is this communication, these messages, it opens the door for these messages to get through to your kids. That's what's happening. All right? Okay. What else is around here? Okay. Any more questions on this? All right, now, as I'm erasing this, I want you to kind of think. And because what we're going to do is we're going to come up for tomorrow, we're going to start our own group here as far as what are some of the issues or topics that you want to begin addressing. Information that you're looking for from other parents. What are some of the specific concerns that you've got as far as not necessarily about your own kids, but maybe about child rearing in general, or about friends that you've got, whatever it might be. What are some of the topics that you want to make sure that we're going to be covering tomorrow?
Is this with any age group?
Yep.
The issue of money, their financial needs as they get older,
yes.
And how much you give them and how much responsibility they take to earn their own money. The weaning process, I guess, from the wallet.
Weaning from what? Is that?
Weaning from the wallet.
Oh, from your wallet.
Yes.
What about age 25?
Because I still have a heart that wants to just give them everything.
Yeah.
I've got a mind that says you can't do that. Mm-hmm. So I'm not clear on it. That's why I'm
okay. Not here. All right.
Well, I think that just in talking with other parents, it's always harder for one parent than the other to be the heavy. You know, there's one that wants to make them toe the line and, do this and have the natural consequences, and at least with us, then the other one, which would be me, is more of a softie. And I've talked to other people that are, that those roles are reversed between mom and dad, but it's really hard to agree on, not that we don't, it's the follow through. And I guess that's how to deal with that.
So consistent follow through as parents,
well,
as a team, so as a parenting
so
team.
So that you're not, because what I've talked to other people that have, especially when your kids go away to college and they come back and they're a different person, and you're trying to deal with them, and one person wants to still make them, you know, be responsible and toe the line, and then the other one wants to, you know, be a softy. You know, where do you meet that?
Okay. Yeah. All right. What else?
I'd appreciate conversation on single parenthood and I'm a single parent and I have two boys, and I'm just wondering what specific things, if there are any, that I can do to help them as a single parent when they don't have a partner to work with.
Okay. What else?
How to get the younger ones to listen better.
How to make, like what we just did, how to make them listen?
Yeah, maybe it's control. But just having, it seems like I tell my child the same thing over and over to do it. So making listening count, or making...
I think the issue is not listening. The issue is whether they choose to comply. Whether they choose to comply.
And what age are you talking about?
Six is mine, but I think it's, it can be a lot of ages.
Okay.
Yeah, I think any age. I think getting, as they get older, when there is more of an issue of control, giving them more control. Their decisions.
Or us realizing how much control they really do have.
Yeah.
It's just hard for us to admit that.
I interject? I heard a great example once that I haven't tried on this, but a mother saying, take out the garbage by the end of the day. And she said it over and over and over and over, and never did happen. So she decided one day, she stood in front of the TV and said, by the end of the day, you have to take the garbage out. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then she says, what did I say? And he repeated it. By the end of the day, I took the garbage out. Willie went to bed and he hadn't done it. So he was in a deep sleep. Huh? 11:55, she went in and she said, you never took the garbage out. So he did it and never forgot.
And the thing is, as you know your children, realizing that something like that with maybe one of your children will work, but with the other, it will not. And so as a parent, you kind of like, you know, but it's ideas like that that kind of get you thinking about maybe another possibility, and not always dwelling on being, you know, so serious about it or so oppressive or like, oh, we got to come up with all these consequences. You know, maybe you can be silly about it and fun, you know? There's friends of mine, their last of four children who was an oops. You know, and he asked if he could bake cookies one night, or one afternoon, and the parents were like, you know, it's fine, you know, it's normal request. Rule in their house, two cookies for dessert, basic rule kind of stuff. So after supper, it's time for dessert, and the son was like, you know, I'll go get the cookies, brings them out, the cookies were this big. Okay? Now, this is a family that had a sense of humor. Okay? And it was like they all had a really good laugh about it. And they were like, if you can eat two of them, and he couldn't. But if you take that kind of approach at times in doing things, instead of making it so, I've got to talk with you, son, or that kind of stuff. And they're like, oh, gosh, what did I do this time? You know? Okay, what else?
Sibling rivalry.
All right.
How to deal with friends, children's friends, that are maybe negatively or potentially negatively impacting our children? How do you deal with them?
Well, a corollary to that is, how do you deal with children's friends when the value system in the friend's house is very different than the value system in your house?
Yeah.
That's the same.
Yeah.
Okay.
Without feeling like you have to, I always used to feel like I have to fix this kid while they're at my
house.
Before I send them home, I should fix them. It's so hard to just keep your mouth shut and kind of stand back and watch.
The question that's being asked more and more, you know, when you're sending a child to another person's house when they're young, is, are there guns in the household?
Yes.
You know? Is there always going to be an adult supervising these kids while they're there? You know, how many of our parents asked that question? Yeah. Okay.
Another issue would be dishonesty or consciously withholding necessary information. Can you tell us about teenagers?
Yeah, I brought the car home. Whose home did you bring it to? You know, okay.
Well, besides, the car is in the garage, but in how many pieces?
Yeah. Whacked out friends or anything that, you know, lets us be unable to sleep at night.
Risk-taking behavior, yeah. Okay.
I mean, you should have extreme. I mean, life is a risk, but extreme risk taking.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else on your list for tomorrow?
If you do that, that's great.
Remember, this is the beginning of what you're going to be taking back with you.
One big cookie.
Okay. All right. Any other questions for tonight? Kind of let you get out a little bit. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
I wanted to make a comment.
Sure.
As tough as this subject is in reality for all of us, we can still laugh about it. Mm-hmm. Where we have a common saving grace attitude. And I just, as I've been picking up on that, as we burst out with laughter over and over, mm-hmm. I just wanted to acknowledge that.
Well, and for me, something is so healing, like hearing Ed say last night about making a journey with his daughter, mm-hmm. and that his wife had never lived to make that journey. And we're at, you know, various forms of brokenness with our kids and still trying to make a relationship with some of the younger ones. And thinking, gee, here's somebody who probably felt as desperate and abandoned as I do now, back in the 70s, when his daughter went through all that, and to hear where the journey is now. So that's very healing.
There is hope. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. I just wanted to say something, too, that our oldest daughter didn't model any of these so-called negative teenage behaviors until almost the end of her senior year, and went through most of the things that you worry about, that you want to have some hand in after she'd gone away to college, which was a lot harder for us, and I think a lot more dangerous for her than if she'd have done some of these things when she was at home. And so all these normal teenage things, I think she was just developmentally slow.
Yeah.
And I think it's easier still to mount under your own roof as much as it's hard than to have them out of the house while they're going through those major changes in, you know, who am I and, you know, what am I doing? And when you don't have any idea or control as far as just being able to interject and to, you know, kind of help to steady them. So even though it's hard, it's good to have them do these normal things where you can kind of keep an eye on them.
Yeah.
I think sometimes that doesn't happen because they feel repressed.
That could be.
And I listened to Ed's story on the flip side and thought of the asides he made about his daughter's path not being the one they had chosen. Mm-hmm. And I know my path was not what my parents chose. And I look at it from the other side. And to be very honest, my parents are in their 70s and they're still very judgmental. When I came home from college, my mother told me I could not slice tomatoes the way I was doing it in her house.
We haven't had any of those tomato slices.
So I can see why a lot of kids went through that in the back of the period that he was referring to, because I think that there were a lot of very, very repressive situations in the households, and it was when you went away, mm-hmm. and many of us went as far away as we could go. Mm-hmm. And
yes.
We had more experimentation.
Yeah. Okay. All right, what I'll do is pull some of this stuff together, have some information for you, going over it, start getting your thinking going on this, and hopefully as we generate some ideas from the group, then that will help you as you take things back home with you. Okay? All right. So, see y'all later then. Take care.